This is the Afternoon Brief on High FM with Michael McKenna. Focused reporting, sharp analysis, and the local stories shaping our lives. Daily updates in a fast-paced world.
Understanding how bribery undermines South Africa's laws. Now, how do we hold both law enforcement and bribers accountable? Now, a recent alleged bribery scandal involving a Gauteng police officer has once again placed corruption within South Africa's corruption spotlight, law enforcement agencies, and the case has reignited concerns about accountability, also public trust in the criminal justice system, and the broader culture of bribery that continues to undermine the rule of law. Now, while much of the focus often falls on public officials accused of accepting bribes, legal experts are pointing out that corruption is a double-sided transaction involving both those who solicit or receive unlawful benefits and those who offer them. Now, the incident is raising important questions about how South Africa can strengthen enforcement, also improve reporting mechanisms, and also ensure that everyone involved in corrupt activities is held accountable. To help us examine the issue, we welcome Karam Singh to the show. Karam is the Executive Director at Corruption Watch. And the big picture, why is this story attracting so much attention? Karam, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me. Just a correction, I'm no longer with Corruption Watch. I'm with Good Governance Africa now, but I'm not the Executive Director.
Good Governance Africa. Okay, Karam, thanks for correcting that for me. I just want to... Good Governance Africa. Right, okay. So, Karam Singh from Good Governance Africa. Karam, okay, so for listeners who may not follow anti-corruption issues closely, why do you think this alleged bribery scandal involving a police officer has generated so much strong public reaction? What concerns does it raise for ordinary South Africans?
Well, I mean, I think your introduction, you know, hit the nail on the head. It goes to the heart of the rule of law and, you know, the type of society that we live in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the extent to which, you know, the comfort levels we have living in a society that's very violent, a society where, the rule of law is not upheld and where corruption is rife. I mean, the implications of corruption, more broadly, systemically, is about the deprivation of fundamental services, whether it be in education, in healthcare, in transport. You know, mm-hmm. This is where, when money's stolen, this is where the drain comes on services. So I think you're right to talk about it as a cultural issue, but we also have to realize that it goes to, you know, the very heart of the society that we all want to live in.
Certainly. I'm just curious. So what legal gray areas would typically arise when prosecuting police bribery cases in the country?
The challenge around prosecutions is around having effective investigations. There's a much greater demand for investigations than we have capacity to deliver. Then the question is, how do we ensure that the investigations that take place are independent? Mm. This is why the police is really the Achilles heel of the problem, because we look to the police to be the enforcers of the law. When the police themselves are not following the law, who's going to hold them accountable? Then we need to have independent police, independent anti-corruption agencies. And we've had the talk about this for decades, you know, going back to the era of state capture. We have lots of recommendations on the table about how we can create a more robust anti-corruption system, a system which protects whistleblowers, protection which insulates a senior police from political interference. But, you know, we're very slow in implementing these recommendations, and it's not clear that we have the political will to drive, you know, the anti-corruption agenda that we require.
Let's look at it from another angle, public attention, that is, which often focuses on the official accused of accepting a bribe. But the law also then criminalizes those who offer unlawful inducements. So why is it important to hold both law enforcement officers and bribers accountable then?
Well, it's, you know, the bribers that feed the system. You know, I mean, it's the bribe. You know, we're talking about a bribing a police officer on the street. You can imagine bribes that happen up the scale of the criminal justice system involving huge amounts to, you know, ensure people get contracts, to ensure that the procurement system is rigged. You know, this is all based upon fundamentally a kind of bribery system. So you have to punish both sides. It's a crime, you know, which requires accountability all around.
We look at police officers entrusted with upholding the law. You did allude to that. Now, what impact do allegations of bribery within law enforcement have on public confidence in the criminal justice system and people's willingness to cooperate with authorities?
Well, I think that's the big problem that we sit with now, you know, is that trust levels are extremely low. And when trust levels are low, it's very difficult to convince people when they see the wrong thing to take it to law enforcement, because they don't know that their allegations are going to be taken seriously. This is why we talk so much about the need to have a robust system which protects whistleblowers, because at the moment, people see the wrong thing and they come and they speak out, they potentially put themselves in danger, you know? So we want to see a system which protects whistleblowers, a system which actually rewards, you know, and incentivizes whistleblowing by ensuring that, you know, that people don't lose their careers, people don't face financial ruin because they speak out against wrongdoing that they see, you know? So, you know, unfortunately, trust is at an all-time low. And this is the dynamic that we're in, that we're only going to really build that trust by implementing implementing new systems and, you know, really, really going to work as a culture, you know, to say that, you know, we don't allow this anymore. It's not acceptable.
Graham, I'm getting a very interesting question in from one of our listeners. The question reads, how significant is the role of video or digital evidence in strengthening these cases?
When it comes to prosecutions are based, are built upon evidence. If you don't have the appropriate evidence, you're not going to get prosecutions. You know, this is why there's a challenge, you know, within the criminal justice system. We have lots of allegations, but there's a big gap between the allegations and being able to prove somebody criminally complicit, and that's based upon evidence. So absolutely, now going forward, we'd like to think in terms of things like money laundering and, you know, moving money around between accounts of officials and public officials, that there's a, you know, there's a paper trail, there's a digital trail that should make the work of law enforcement easier.
We look at the country having anti-corruption legislation in place, including provisions under the Prevention and Combating of Corruption of Corrupt Activities Act. So do you believe existing laws are being effectively enforced, or are there gaps that really need to be addressed here?
No, I don't think any of us can say confidently that the laws are being effectively enforced. If they were, you know, we would see a lot more prosecutions. There have been these big cases enrolled, but they go on for years and years because criminal defendants have lots of rights which allow them to slow down the process. So, there's a real need for criminal justice reform. There needs to be more resources allocated to it in terms of specialized prosecutors, in terms of specialized courts. And, you know, we need to put a lot of emphasis into the whole exercise of asset recovery.
Hello, Karim.
The special investigating unit and with the type of cases that they're bringing in front of the special tribunal. If we could do those things, implement new whistleblower support legislation, we could go a long way towards trending in the right direction, away from the direction we're going now.
Another question coming through, Karim. Why do so many allegations of bribery within the South African police services struggle to result in successful prosecutions?
It's very complicated. We can speculate why investigations are not done effectively, or as we see in terms of the allegations in front of the Madlanga Commission, investigations are politically interfered with, you know. So we have all sorts of evidence around that. There's challenges around capacity to effectively do investigations. So there's lots of reasons, you know. It's a very complex universe.
When we come to systemic failures, what systemic failures allow corruption risks to persist within policing structures?
I mean, you know, we haven't had a national police commissioner that hasn't been asked to step aside for serious allegations of wrongdoing. Some of, in the case of Jackie Salebi, were effectively prosecuted. So there is a challenge around how the fact that people get appointed to senior positions and then there's not proper oversight or monitoring in terms of how we implement things like lifestyle audits. How do we ensure, you know, that the leadership of the police are not complicit with organized crime?
Right.
So I think, you know, it's you know, easy to say, you know, people rise up through the ranks and they're appointed because they could have a spotless record up to a certain point, and then when they take leadership positions, they become compromised. But certainly. We can be doing a lot more in terms of lifestyle audits and in terms of independent oversight of both the police and you know, politicians that control that work with the police.
If South Africa is serious about tackling bribery and restoring trust in public institutions, from your perspective, what practical steps then should government, law enforcement agencies, and citizens then prioritize moving forward?
We should prioritize implementing the various recommendations from the National Anti-Corruption Strategy and the recommendations from the National Advisory Council Against Corruption and the recommendations from the Zondo Commission. We need to have a much more robust transparency within the public procurement system. We need to have a real system of whistleblower support and protection, including incentivizing whistleblowing. We need to establish an independent anti-corruption commission, and we need to strengthen mechanisms within the law to assist with asset recovery through supporting the work of the special tribunal. Then there's all the culture work that we need to do as a society to try to rebuild that trust and to have a speak out culture. You know, and this is not just about corruption. This is about ensuring that we have a society that where there's less violence, where there's less gender-based violence, where there's less anxiety around non-nationals, you know. So there's a lot we need to do in the fight against corruption. It's not just about, obviously, as we've spoken about, just putting new laws in place or having better leadership, but it's about having a better ecosystem, including promoting that kind of active citizenry and people knowing that if they speak out, they'll be protected.
Well, certainly this debate around bribery extends far beyond individual misconduct. As you've outlined, Krum, it's raised deeper questions about ethics, governance, public trust, institutional accountability, and the collective responsibility required to uphold the rule of law. Krum, thank you so much for joining us on today's show. Krum Singh of Good Governance Africa, helping us examine how bribery undermines South Africa's laws, and why holding both law enforcement officials and those who offer bribes accountable is essential to strengthening democracy and public confidence in the justice system.